Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. A Washington, D.C. tour bus driver who accidentally hit and killed Skagway's mayor and her mother has pled guilty. KHNS reports that Gerard James faces up to 4 years in jail for two counts of felony negligent homicide in the deaths of Skagway Mayor Monica Carlson and her mother Cora Louise Adams. The women were on a trip to the nation's capital last December and in a crosswalk on Pennsylvania Avenue when video footage shows James made an illegal left turn while talking on his cell phone. According to court testimony, the 45-year-old driver had decades of driving experience without major incidents and no criminal history. His attorney said he accepted a plea deal because he wanted to take responsibility for his negligence. James apologized to the family. He's scheduled to be sentenced in November. Monica Carlson had been Skagway's mayor since 2017. Her term expires this year and is being completed by Andrew Cremata. Cremata says the community is still grieving. Alaska State Troopers have made an arrest in a long, cold Anchorage murder investigation. Alaska Public Media reports the case dates back to January 1978.
A young woman by the name of Shelley Conley was left on the side of the Seward Highway for dead.
Colonel Barry Wilson announced the news at a press conference in Anchorage yesterday.
This past Friday, 62-year-old Donald F. McQuaid was taken into custody in Grisham, Oregon, and charged with murder in the first degree and murder in the second degree for the death of Shelley.
Connolly was 16 years old when she was found murdered and sexually assaulted, but investigators were unable to identify a suspect until earlier this year when investigator Randy McFerrin says the Department of Public Safety submitted a DNA sample from the case to a private genetic genealogy database for cross-reference, and McQuaid was ID'd.
This guy was never on the radar. I had no idea that he was involved until this process developed him as a potential suspect.
According to the DPS, McQuaid has lived in and out of Alaska, and court records show past domestic violence and stalking charges spread between Palmer, Anchorage, and the Kenai. McQuaid remains in custody in Oregon. Troopers say they intend to try him in Alaska. It's the second time this year that state law enforcement has identified a suspect in a long-stalled investigation using genetic genealogy. In February, a Maine man was arrested and charged with the 1993 sexual assault and murder of Sophie Sergey at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Organizers of the effort to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy plan to submit signatures gathered for their petition application to the state tomorrow. According to the Recall Dunleavy website, 37,731 signatures have been gathered for the application, far more than the 28,501 required. Recall Dunleavy organizers have scheduled a guided walk to a Division of Elections office in Anchorage tomorrow afternoon to submit the signatures for review and certification. It's the first phase of a two-part process to put a recall question before voters. If the application is approved and the state superior court rules in favor of the petition, organizers will have to collect over 71,000 signatures to get the question on a statewide ballot. Golden Valley Electric Association members may see a rate increase due to wildfire damage to power lines on the Kenai. A transmission line that brings lower-cost hydropower to the rail belt has been shut down since mid-August due to the Swan Lake fire.
Losing this energy is going to cause there to be an impact on rate.
Golden Valley President and CEO Corey Borgeson says the utility has not had access to power from Bradley Lake since the wildfire overran a 20-mile stretch of the line about 10 days ago.
There is significant damage to the line, poles that have been burned up, wires, cross arms destroyed, and parts of the line will certainly have to be rebuilt.
Borgeson says officials with Homer Electric Association, which runs Bradley Lake and maintains the power line, aren't sure when they'll be able to make repairs.
It is so hot out there that I've been told by Homer Electric that they can't even go out and really assess the damage.
He says the co-op usually gets 5 to 10 megawatts of electricity from the hydro project and sometimes as much as 17 megawatts. And the loss could result in a rate hike in December.
It's really hard to tell the exact impact on rates, but this is very valuable energy for Golden Valley members, and it will caused us to have somewhat of an increase in rate.
Borgeson says the rate change is up to the Golden Valley Board of Directors, which just reduced rates effective September 1st, largely due to the uninterrupted operation of the co-op's coal-fired Healy 2 power plant.
We adjusted the rates downwards 4.7%, mostly based upon the success we were having at Healy.
Borgeson says any rate increase would likely amount to a few dollars a month for the average residential customer. Officials with other utilities affected by the loss of Bradley Lake Power are also anticipating small rate increases. A Homer Electric Association spokesperson says crews will repair the transmission line as soon as it's safe to access the area. The National Park Service is considering visitor facility and service upgrades near the end of the 92-mile road into Denali National Park. Denali Outdoor Recreation Planner Emily Boer says a public process is underway to gather input. A new facility is proposed for the Wonder Lake and Kentishna areas, including ideas from park plans dating back as far as 1997.
Designing a trail system from old mining routes in the area. And they also talk about a hostel, which we're referring to as rustic lodging, or a campground.
Boer says the Park Service is gathering feedback on those, plus some new proposals.
Trails that connect some of these old mining routes, setting capacities for the area so we have an understanding of how much the area as a whole can sustain in terms of use, and then also a transportation system. It's nearly a 9-mile walk from the Wonder Lake Campground to the Kentishna Airstrip, so how do we move people more fluidly between those areas?
Boer says five private lodges currently operate in the area, and there's already been concern voiced that expanding public facilities could erode the wilderness experiences the businesses offer.
There's always a concern about the public walking onto private property, and especially when your guests are expecting a backcountry experience. You don't necessarily want the general public there, and I understand that.
Boer says the proposals reflect a Department of Interior initiative to expand public access in national parks, but she acknowledges it's a different approach than Denali has taken.
This park is very much about getting off the trail and creating your own experience, like setting up camp where you think is best to set up camp and not having that decided for you. And so offering backcountry backpacking loops and designated campsites, well, it's a new opportunity in Denali, and what people are used to maybe in the lower 48, it's not necessarily what Denali's offered or been about in the past.
Boer says turnout was good at recent public meetings on the proposals held at Wonder Lake and in the park entrance, and attendees shared a lot of opinions.
I think there's support for addressing some of the trails that have resource damage on them, and there's not necessarily the same support for these backcountry backpacking loops, backcountry campsites. Like, that's all brand new for Denali, and how we fund that kind of work and how we monitor the resource damage in backcountry toilets and all of that, that would just be a whole new lift for Denali.
Boer says no additional meetings are planned, but that the agency has extended the public comment period from September 17th to October 31st. Additional steps in the review process include wetland and cultural surveys, a cost analysis, and a visitor capacity study. Results from those efforts will be included in a draft plan, which will also be subject to public review. I'm Dan Bross.